So people asking me, they're like, you're still here? How much longer are you here? 12 more days. 12 more days is the answer. So it feels... precious and bittersweet to be up here speaking today. This is the last time I do this, for a while at least. As most of you know, husband Jeremy and I are moving away, or flying on the 31st of October to England and settling there for 6 months to be closer to our aging parents. And then after that, end of April next year, we'll be back, but in Fredericton for 6 months again in the next half of the year to be near our daughter Emily. So that's a pattern we imagine repeating in the years to come, but it's all pretty uncertain and evolving. And at the moment, we are in the very belly of the beast that is sorting and purging and packing. You all know how fun that is, right? It's a lot. And I'm sure many of you have also experienced the tension ahead of a move. Like wanting to savour still being in a place you love and with people you love, but while needing to focus on the hard work of preparing to leave. And also the tension of living with the grief of what's being left, and also the draw towards what's to come. It all feels strange and hard and human and good. So I want to share with you today from this liminal between things kind of space that I'm in, some of what's been on my mind and heart during these days and has been helping me and orienting me amidst change and disorientation. And this morning I'm also going to be tag teaming with Virginia, who in a little while will come up and share with us some of her current journey with cancer and treatment for it. And what I hope is that both my and Virginia's stories and reflections, what I hope it will bring alive for us today, is what it means to have our hearts set on pilgrimage. Or in other words, what can help us all individually and collectively to journey as well as we can through whatever life brings. In our diverse personal stories, we all know what it's like to lose hope on the journey, to struggle and wonder if we can keep going, to lose sight of the point of it all. And if we pan out for our individual life experiences and consider our current cultural political climate, I feel like there's an acute awareness right now among us, among many of us, that we're not where we want to be, and also not at all sure of the road ahead. And in that place, I think we feel more keenly than usual our deep need to stay connected with expansive and hopeful visions of life. Visions that keep us going through struggle and that orient our actions amidst uncertainty. So I suppose what I have to share today is simply an encouragement for this beloved church community to keep going, to keep seeking and embodying together those kind of enlightening and empowering visions, otherwise known as setting our hearts on pilgrimage. So that phrase, heart set on pilgrimage, comes from a pilgrim psalm, Psalm 84, and the full verse reads like this: blessed are those whose strength is in you, whose hearts are set on pilgrimage. Psalm 84 seems to be a song to encourage pilgrims on their long, hard journey to visit and worship at the temple in Jerusalem, reminding them why they set out on the journey in the first place and why it's worth keeping going. And reconnecting them with the longing that is or was motivating them for the journey, the joy that's set before them. We need songs like that, don't we? And a pilgrimage, of course, doesn't have to be to Jerusalem, but is any physical journey with a religious destination or a spiritual intention. Pilgrimage has been an important practice in most religious traditions for millennia. And in our time, it's kind of seeing a bit of a revival, which probably says something about what we need in these days. And the ancient pilgrim route called the Camino de Santiago, ending in the city of Santiago de Compostela in northern Spain, is one of the most well-known and kind of increasingly popular of organisations, those groups in our day. And some of us in this community have made that journey difficult and life-changing journey. This August, I helped to lead a study abroad trip to the UK for St Stephen's University. And as part of that trip, alongside 27 other pilgrims, I had the privilege of walking sections of another ancient pilgrim route called St Cuthbert's Way. And this photo and the one before it and the slide before was from the first day of that walking pilgrimage. And this St Cuthbert's Way has as its destination not a city, but an island, the holy island of Lindisfarne, which is off the northeast coast of England. And for me, though it initially felt strange and kind of unsettling to go to the UK in August when I was so close to moving more permanently, ultimately, that physical experience of being on pilgrimage felt very encouraging and supportive for what's to come for me. It feels as if the embodied experience of walking with others on an ancient route towards a sacred destination kind of brought the metaphor and concept of pilgrimage alive for me in a fresh way. And it's helping me to see myself not just as like a drifter, but as a pilgrim on a sacred journey. Tolkien says, not all who wander are lost, right? The walking pilgrimage seems to have helped me accept this season of kind of wandering in my life, so that instead of feeling only untethered from what is familiar, although that feeling has been there too, I also feel grounded in a bigger perspective on what my life's about. And I think that's what seeing life as a pilgrimage can do for us. So, as we know, pilgrimage describes a journey with a different spirit, different set of characteristics than trips like vacation or like an aimless wandering or like just trying to get from A to B. But one paradoxical reality about pilgrimage is that as a journey with a sacred destination, the destination isn't actually the only thing that's important. On this journey of intention and purpose, the process of moving towards the destination becomes just as important and sacred for the pilgrim as arriving. Though the pilgrim's vision of that someday arrival is significant and motivating in moving through the process, pilgrimage has sometimes been described as the outward expression of an inward journey. So the inward journey, the intention, is essential. In other words, not just going through the motions of the journey, not just setting your feet on the path, but setting your heart on the path too. When I was thinking about what I understand that to mean, I think one of the things I understand having your heart set on pilgrimage to mean is a combination of staying connected to your intention for the journey and bringing a wholehearted presence to each moment of the journey. In recent years, and I think I'm not alone in this, it's been really helpful for me to practice being more fully present to the present moment, not just fixated on the past or the future. But recently, I've been seeing that this practice is most helpful for me when I see the present moment in a bigger context of my life and my life's purpose as a whole, even in the context of eternity. And this is a tension, or a balance maybe, that the Jesuit teacher Kevin O'Brien, who Laura and I were just at a conference with him on Prince Edward Island, he describes this tension or this balance like this. We must pay attention both to where we are walking and to the distant horizon. Not so focused on our end that we miss out on what is right around us. Not so focused on what's around us that we lose sight of the end that keeps us on track. A friend recently shared a simple cartoon with me that I thought said so much about this kind of tension or balance within what we might call a pilgrim's mindset. I love this little thing. So we've got this mountain, and at the top is maybe sometimes how we approach things, like just seeing the top of the mountain, like the destination as the place, like I am here. And so before that, it's just I'm almost there, and then afterwards, I was there. Right? But then the bottom one has the same mountain, but the little stick person is like, I am here, I am here, I am here. at each moment. And what I think is very simply brilliant about this is in that bottom sketch, the mountain is still there, and there's some helpful perspective from being aware of that mountain and where you are in relation to your journey, to you on the mountain. But that little stick figure, and Jeremy suggested that his name is Ralph. Ralph is not wishing the journey away. He's not even the hard parts. And nor is he acting as if only one element of it counts or is worthy of presence. Ralph is finding a way to be present to it all while keeping his overall journey and purpose in mind. Yay, Ralph. So, and here, Jeremy, yes. So here is me setting my feet and my heart on pilgrimage in August. So this was the last bit of walking to the Holy Isle of Lindisfarne. It's called Crossing the Holy Sands. And you walk it barefoot, it's a few miles. And this is me, happy pilgrim. And you can see, you can just see like a pole to the left of me. There's like a straight line of poles that you follow across mud, sand, shallow water, and I can't really describe how impactful it was for me to do that. In some ways it's just a walk, you know, but it did feel like more than that, to be on this route that is so ancient that people have crossed for a long time. It's a tidal island, so you walk over at low tide, and then the tide, we stayed overnight so the tide closes and you're like on this island, and then you can leave again once the tide goes down again. And it was such a tangible experience of how pilgrimage is this, like the destination matters, that you're going to this island, which is really cool. And but also that just the experience of walking those holy sands together with other people, and being right there in the moment with our, if you could see this, the photo on the right is, you can see all our bare footprints in the mud. Just such a immediacy to the experience, as well as like anticipating what's to come. So, right. Yeah?
Why is it called holy?
Because it's been a pilgrimage destination for so long. But it's like, it was, it is a destination because of the presence of some really important Celtic saints, actually St. Cuthbert and St. Aidan. Yes. So, back to this psalm then, the pilgrimage psalm, Psalm 84. So actually, this has been one of my favourite psalms for many years. And in all my sorting of old files and papers, I recently came across the beginnings of an outline for a sermon on pilgrimage based on this psalm, which I created when I was studying at SSU with Jeremy back in 2002. So lucky you, I'm bringing this sermon outline back, unused, because I had fun with the timeless sermon technique of alliteration and came up with a collection of words that all begin with P to describe her pilgrimage according to the Psalms. So, are you ready for all the P's of pilgrimage?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, no. Oh, yeah, here we are. No, not yet. Okay. So, you might have noticed a few P's already, because I've touched on pilgrimage being a journey with a sacred purpose, and that its sacred purpose also makes it that the process, the journey itself, meaningful and sacred. You aren't just hurrying to the end point, but you're bringing presence to each moment along the way. Presence. Like Ralph saying, I am here, I am here, I am here. So that's three P's already. But let's read Psalm 84, 1-7 to see if we can find any more P's. Hint, we can. So, here we go. It starts, how lovely is your dwelling place, Lord of hosts. My soul yearns, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself where she may have her young. A place near your altar, Lord of hosts, my King and my God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They are ever praising you. I'm just going to pause there. So these initial verses are full of devotion and longing, abounding in metaphors of home, like dwelling place, house, home, nest. Did I miss that one there? I thought I had them, but I don't. Okay, never mind. So dwelling place, house, home, nest. There's abundance of words like that, and it's a home found in the loving heart of God. As you can imagine, these are concepts and longings I really resonate with right now on many levels. I'm so aware of the gift of a physical home and all it represents. I'm aware of the pain of leaving a home that I love. I'm also aware of the call of something more important than just a bricks and mortar house. And the longing for a deeper inner experience of home that can't be left, can't be lost. And this week I went to my last writer's circle here in the cafe, for a while at least. And our writing prompt this month was the word ghost. So earlier that day I paused the work of moving, surrounded by chaos, looking at a chair that we inherited from Lorna's parents, and that's soon going to rain, Rosie. To write 3 haiku on the theme of packing up our house. So here are those haiku. Ghosts are everywhere among these bags and boxes, recalled and released. Empty rocking chair, full of spirit, history, time for a new home. Something real remains. My favourite ghost is holy, a home I carry. I love that my favourite ghost is holy. So I was just really grateful to be able to express something of my current experience in simple poetry, in that the longing for home, the connection to home, but the longing for a deeper kind of experience of home that you carry with you. So back to the psalmist's poetry then. Directly after this ecstatic expression of delight in and longing for God and for a home in God, and you know, for the Jewish psalmist that's embodied in love and longing for the temple as God's dwelling place, comes this pilgrimage verse. Blessed are those whose strength is in you, whose hearts are set on pilgrimage. And I love that two very different blessings are side by side here. There's the blessing of home and the blessing of journey. There's the blessing of dwelling in the place you love and of longing to reach it. And I think this points to the truth that pilgrimage is a journey of longing, and it's the perfect practice for people like us, restless humans. And I see another aspect of P for presence here, that the journey of pilgrimage is mysteriously not only a journey towards God, seeking and longing for God, but also one taken with God. The pilgrim's strength is in God, aware of God's presence and help along the way. And it's clear that the presence and help are multifaceted. So at the beginning, although the longing for God's dwelling place is first expressed by the individual, my soul longs, it quickly becomes communal. Blessed are those whose hearts are set on pilgrimage. So this psalm isn't about one isolated stick pilgrim, Ralph, but about a group, a community, people on the move, Ralph and his buddies. And this is another vital P of pilgrimage, people. Ah, thank goodness we're on the journey together. The challenging parts of life make it even more obvious than usual that we need each other. And then so often, if we let them, the challenges connect us to each other in a new way. People are often what enable us to be more present to the journey than we'd be able to be alone. Of course, we know that for most of us, it's impossible to be present to all of it. Here speaks the woman who has a much stronger urge to play online Scrabble than usual, and is giving into it fairly regularly. But I can say from my own experience that any presence I am able to bring to the journey of life and its challenges is only possible because of the loving presence of God and of others with me, including you. And I'm very grateful for that. So, finally then, the next few verses describe the experience of these people on pilgrimage together to the temple, the dwelling place of God. And they say this: "Blessed are those whose strength is in you, whose hearts are set on pilgrimage. As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. The autumn rains also cover it with pools. They go from strength to strength, till each appears before God in Zion." Ooh, there's a lot going on there, and not enough to say much of it, not enough time to say much of it, because we want to hear from Virginia and get to our soup and bread lunch. But we can clearly see the process of pilgrimage here, and it's a hopeful process, going from strength to strength. And certainly these pilgrims on their way to Jerusalem must be becoming more tired on the physical plane. And yet on another level, somehow their strength is increasing. It's clear though that it's not a journey without challenges. The Valley of Baca here is usually translated as Valley of Tears or Valley of Weeping. And all pilgrims pass through painful places like that. There's something about the act of setting your heart on pilgrimage though that appears to have the capacity to transform these places of pain and struggle. As they pass through the valley of tears, they make it a place of springs. And I expect we could probably share ideas and stories for hours here about what it is that we believe can transform a place of suffering into a place of refreshment, with springs that wash and nourish and even incredibly bring joy. And the psalm doesn't say how the pilgrims turn this place of tears into a place of springs. But one thing we can definitely say from the psalm is that the pilgrims keep going through the valley of weeping. They don't stop, they don't give up, they pass through it. So perhaps hopeful perseverance like this is transformative in its own right. Not necessarily changing our circumstances, but how we're experiencing them and the inner state that's possible for us amidst them. I think it's interesting to notice that the water remains in this place, but it turns from tears to springs. We can also say that the very fact that these pilgrims know where they're heading and who they're heading there with, they know their purpose and they know their people, bring it to the perspective that makes hopeful perseverance amidst challenge possible. So there you go. There are the six P's of pilgrimage. No. 2002 Rachel.
What about pools?
Pools, right? Any other P's? I was thinking patience. Past, place, peace, praise. You see, we could write a book together. All the many P's.
Passing.
Yes, passing. Okay. There's potential for this to grow and grow. Potential. Obviously, I don't mean all this to sound overly neat and tidy, because we know life isn't like that. So let's shift gears now and hear from Virginia about her real life experience of passing through a valley of tears. And she's not going to pretty it up. She's not going to try to artificially align with all my amazing P's of pilgrimage. we just want the chance to hear a little more than we'd usually be able to about what it's like for you, Virginia, this season. I know from witnessing how you're approaching this, though, that there's an incredible lot of presence and perseverance going on. So thanks for wanting to share with us, and tears are welcome, and anything you want to share with us is welcome. So thank you. you are. Yeah.
All right. I do not have a father who's 6'8" or 6'7".
Prologue.
Just kidding.
Thank you all for being people who do like to witness other people in messy places, because this is pretty messy. And I did write something out, and then I checked it because I wanted to just speak from my heart. So it's hard for me to talk about anything since I've been here without bringing up the pandemic a little bit. It's actually a prologue. It was really hard, as it was for a lot of people, and it did not handle it well. And that was my one big takeaway after it was done, was I wish that I had handled it better. Like, all the things that were, like, coming at us, in retrospect, were all handleable. And of course, part of what made the pandemic such a cluster was that we didn't know was going to happen. So there's a lot of grace there, and I'm not, you know, not like flailing myself. But it was a crisis. It was one of the biggest crises in my adult life that I had to handle, and I left it just being like, well, I just wish I had done it better. And so, yeah. So about a year and a half ago, my mom got sick with glioblastoma, which some of you know and some of you don't. And also glioblastoma, I did not know this before my mom was diagnosed. It's incredibly deadly. It's one of the deadliest cancers, and it usually die within like 6 months to 2 years. And my mother had a lot of trauma, and she was never present to anything. Sorry, Mom, if you're listening. But you get it now. So, yeah. My mom was really clearly gonna die, and she refused a lot of the treatment. She did some of them, but she had a lot of trauma, and it was her belief always that the more I can control, the better it's gonna be, right? Which is something I've had to spend a lot of my life undoing, and I'm not always successful at. See the aforementioned pandemic. but anyway, yeah, she refused most of the chemo. I think she did one round, and she was planning her 100th birthday party, and that was her way of coping. Like, she just was not present to what was happening. Also, glioblastoma is a brain cancer, so it is very, like, it messes with your mind. Also, I know my mother, and this is exactly what she would have been doing. And so anyway, she's planning this 100th birthday party, and she's telling me about, like, this conference center she's gonna have, and this pony named Seamus that she's gonna have at this 100th birthday party, and it was just not gonna happen, and I knew that, and you know, and I sat with her and I let her do it, because one thing I learned in counseling school is you don't take away somebody's coping skill unless you can offer them a better one. And so I just let her do it. And that was the right decision in the moment for me. But when I got sick, 5 months after she died, I was just like, how do I do this better than I did the pandemic? And how do I do this better than my mom couldn't show me how to do, even though she loved to teach people, and she would have loved to have been that sort of person. So one of the first experiences I had after I was diagnosed was I went and I got my CT scan, and the nurse, it was so great, because like the first 2 weeks was like just everybody's face was just like this. And then you go to the hospital and everyone's like, another day, another dollar, everybody's got cancer. So it was really great talking to her, and I was like, I can take a shitty year. And she's like, yeah, a couple of shitty years. I was like, right, right. I don't get to control how long this is. I don't know how long this will be. I just don't know. And at that point, also, I didn't know what stage I was. It took 6 weeks of this purgatory of like not knowing what stage. And also, spoiler alert, the difference between stage 3 cancer and stage 4 cancer is like 70 percentage points if you're going to live or die. It's incredibly different having stage 3 versus having stage 4. I do not have stage 4. But anyway, I think when she said that, and just between a couple of things, I changed my thinking from like, I can have a shitty year to like, not everything about this year is going to be bad. Not everything about this time period is going to be bad. There's going to be a lot of good things. And so I do not want the bad things to take away from the good things. And so there's been so many good things. Like, and some of them are because of cancer, and some of them are just normal things that were going to happen. You know, like, some of the things that have happened because of cancer that are nice is I get a lot more time with Don. We get to go to the city. We discovered a bagel place in Bangor that's really good. Katie told us about it because Katie knows everything that's delicious. So I was like, I need carbs, but I need them to be good. Like, what do I do? And she's like, bagel place. And then, like, the other day, Jack won a coloring contest from the fire department, and so he got to be driven to school in a fire truck. Not because of cancer, but that's just, like, a good thing that happened, right? And so it's, like, that's true. Also, last week, or last time I was there, cover your ears if you're queasy, but, like, they couldn't, like, this woman, like, kept getting my port in the wrong place, and it was like a pincushion. Like, that sucks. Like, that does not feel good. Like, and I'm seeing some people who I know who've had cancer are nodding their heads. Like, and a lot of the time I feel like I have this vision of me, like, as about a six-year-old wearing a coat, like, or, like, being, have the coat being put on, like, me. Like, it feels like I do not feel like a warrior. I do not feel like Xena, the warrior princess. I feel like a little kid who's having their coat put on for them because there's all this really big stuff happening to me. I am not doing it. It is being done to me. The only thing I have control over is my emotions. And I don't have full control over that. But, like, the control, and I guess I could blow off chemo. I'm not gonna do that. I've got Jack. I've got Don. Like, obviously I'm gonna do the chemo. And I am present to the fact that, like, I have something in me that will kill me if I do not take care of it, or have it taken care of for me again. I am not doing this. I do not have the knowledge, and I'm so grateful for the knowledge that people have. I feel like I got a little off track there, I'm just really feeling present to that there is good stuff and there is bad stuff. Loving all of the old friends who've gotten back in touch with me. I'm loving all the extra time with people. Another thing that I felt really present to was, like, during this past year with Mom being sick, it was all about, like, do I stop working? Like, when do I stop working? Like, if this is 6 months, my dad can probably handle it. But if it goes to 2 years, like, that is not gonna work. Because there was not enough, like, support, local support. They live in Atlanta. My dad lives in Atlanta. My mom used to live in Atlanta. But anyway, so, like, what am I, like, do I stop working? Do I go take care of this? Like, what do I do? And then the second that this happened, I was like, I'm not working. And we're gonna figure that out. And for anyone who knows me really well, like, you know how big of a deal that is, because A, I do really like to work. I like time off too. I like a lot of stuff. I'm like a person who likes a lot of stuff. So it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm not working. I'm like, yeah, I like making bread. I can make bread, like, that's cool. But I am really insecure about money. Like, that's the thing that's hard for me. And we're fine, by the way. Like, we're taken care of. That's not what I'm saying right now. But trusting that it's like those trust falls from the 80s. Like, trusting that I'm just going to be caught Like, if I stop working, like, even though, by the way, I have a very capable husband right here, so none of this is shade to him, but, like just that insecurity of me, like, being present to that and being like, I know that this is what I have to do. Like, it was very clear in my spirit, this is what I have to do. I'm also present to the fact that, maybe this is what I'll end with, I feel really present to the fact that, like, on one hand, it's like, WTF, God, you knew this was in me. Colon cancer is very slow growing. How come when I told the doctors I had hemorrhoids when I was pregnant with Jack, nobody suggested a colonoscopy? You know, like, because every pregnant woman has hemorrhoids, you know? Like, there's, like, don't be, like, wronged here. Like, there are times where I am, like, angry with God. And also, like, some of the timing and some of the gifts, like, you just have no idea, like, how much it just feels like this unfolded so beautifully, like, in terms of, like, what it felt like we could handle and, like, what it felt like if I had found this out when my mom was, like, a month away from dying, like, oof, I don't know, and my family, like, it was hard enough on them, like, being diagnosed so soon after, I just don't know. And, like, we had, like, some of the finances too, like, why I'm able to just stop working, like, that fell into place so perfectly with timing. And I just feel so grateful for that. And, like, there are God's hands, like, traces of God's work everywhere. And, you know, and I was talking to a friend who's a pastor and is just really one of the most present people I know, and I call her when I get ragey, and then she calls me when she gets ragey, and we sort of exchange it. And I was telling her about how I felt, and I was like, and by the way, it's not the worst it could be, because I could be in Gaza, and she's like, the same things are happening in Gaza. Like, God is present there. People are taking care of each other there. Like that's happening there too. Like, don't be deceived. And she's a person who spent time in, like, Sudan in, like, the middle of civil war. And she's like, it was happening there. It's happening everywhere. Like, God moves towards restoration. She was reading a book. I don't remember what the book was or I recommend it. But she's reading this book about God moves towards restoration, and it feels like that. And also, not everybody gets healed when they're sick. I don't know that I'll be healed. It's looking really good. Like, it is looking really good. And so, that's great. Oh gosh, I did have a quote I was going to read, but I think I didn't put it in my phone, and it would take too long to pull it up. But it was about grief and joy coexisting. There's this really wonderful writer who, by the way, I did not even know was a Canadian Mennonite. And then I started reading her book, and I was like, no wonder I'm attracted to this book, because I have a type, people. But anyway, but it was about grief and joy coexisting, and that is very much happening in my life. So thank you for the opportunity to talk. I am feeling all of the prayers, and I'm feeling all of the support. We are still needing it. This journey is very much still in the very thick of it. The stage of colon cancer I have typically has about a 1-year period that's the very intense treatment period. And so I'm about halfway through that. I've got a couple more rounds of chemo. And then they think after a couple more rounds of chemo, I'll have about a month off, and then I'll have my big surgery, which is similar to the one Karen Peterson had. And then a lot of recovery time, and a lot of dealing with things like ostomies and potential ostomy reversals, and just really getting to know a new body. So it's gonna be, it's gonna keep being a pilgrimage, and we are gonna keep needing your support. So thank you so much so far, and also don't forget, like, we're carrying a lot of weight right now, but also don't be afraid to ask for what we can give, which is often often for me, a listening ear. I'm a counselor without clients right now, so if you have a problem, you'll all solve it. So getting rambly, back to you.
Thank you so much, Virginia. Wow, what a gift. Thank you. Thanks. That's really, really wonderful. Okay, it's nearly time for lunch together. I just want to end with blessing. First, I just want to say thank you for the blessing that you are to me. With the kind, you know, perspective granted by this season of transition, I'm very aware that being rooted in this community is one of the great gifts and privileges of my life. You know? And I'm grateful that I get to stay connected with you. If I'm not living here. Yes, that man at the back there.
Can we come pray for you?
I think we're going to pray for me next week, maybe. Is that right? I'm here next week. Still here for another 12 days. Next Sunday. Yes. Thank you, though. Thanks, Brian. So then I also want to leave you the blessing from one pilgrim heart to your pilgrim heart. This is the blessing of these six peas of pilgrimage. Okay? Please receive this blessing from me. May you set your heart, body, mind, and soul on pilgrimage every day of your precious life. However hard or tiring life might sometimes be, may an expansive vision always reclaim your imagination, giving you purpose and making your life a sacred journey of discovery. May you actively and hopefully journey amongst fellow pilgrims with whom you remember and embody the holy meaning of your life. May you journey further and lighter together. May you know in your bones the truth that you are not alone on the road. May you experience the gift of a loving home with others, with God, and within yourself. When you feel homeless, may you find the strength to keep seeking what your heart desires, in trust that it too is seeking you. May you neither miss out on what's around you, nor lose sight of the purpose that keeps you going. May you learn to balance the holy perspective given by purpose with the presence of grateful attention to the gift of the moment. May you always discover within yourself and in the company of your companions, human and divine, the perseverance that keeps you moving through life struggles and turns the valley of tears into a place of springs. As you pass through life's shifting terrain, may you yourself become a place of springs for others and for your own soul, for the flourishing of all. Amen.
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 I'm not going to be here next week, so I just wanted to say just a few words about this beautiful person who I've pilgrimaged with for some time, and I'm really glad that she will remain rooted in this community. But what I wanted to share is, so, you know, her friendship has meant a great deal, but we've also been colleagues in a variety of contexts, and you know, SSU and here, and travel trips, and all kinds of things, and there have been some moments, you know, over the last 10 years, especially, in the midst of that. And I just want to say one of the things that I've come to rely on through this time is realizing how important to me it is to be able to check in with you on discernment. And I think what I would just draw attention to is that if you can find someone who is honest and wise and is a person of integrity, like, you just want to hang on to that. Also, honest and wise, Virginia. Just mention that too. And And so that's meant a great deal because I knew I could come to you, and I knew I would sometimes hear affirmation, and I would sometimes hear difference. And it was all good. And it was all something that was easy to be open to. And it's just been transformative. And I'm so glad that you've invited that kind of checking in and consultation forevermore. Because that means a great deal, and I totally trust, because of the trust in you, I trust that friendship will be much stronger than distance. So just wanted to say that since I'm not here next week.